The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Our action-packed April rolls on tomorrow, highlighted by a special NBA 75th anniversary telecast of Nets and Knicks on ESPN2. We got baseball's opening day Thursday. We got ABC Saturday NHL matinee this weekend, and we cap it off with UFC 273, featuring two title fights, a little bit of everything for you this month. And speaking of a little bit of everything, meanwhile on planet Earth, I want you all to enjoy George Kittle enjoying WrestleMania this weekend. Bart Scott, take a look. Here's Kittle. He's ready to go. Look at him go. About it?
It was the return of Stone Cold, so paying a little homage as he hit Vince McMahon with the Stone Cold Stunner this weekend.
Yeah, including our Pat McAfee, right? Did McAfee take the Stone Cold Stunner directly in the gut?
Absolutely.
I like it there. There's George Kittle enjoying the time. That just looks like it's fun. I don't know.
I just smelling that on a shirt, though. You got to wear that home. Like.
They got to shotgun those things, though, man. They got a shotgun.
Was that poor etiquette
there? You need the filter.
Either one.
Can you do that with a Chablis? Anyway, with that, we welcome you back to live from the Seaport, brought to you by Chase. Another hour of Get Up. This squad is here, and that's not all. Look what else we have joining the party here. The one, the only, Ryan Clark is ready to go with us this morning. Tim Hasselbeck is here as well. Seth Greenberg, my Uncle Seth, no relation, is standing by as we get you set for hour number two of Get Up. Cindy, let's roll it, because we're going to be busy. We're getting up with a comeback for the ages. Rock, Chalk, Jayhawk, making history. We got you covered every which way on the biggest comeback of all time. Then, is this about to become the most dangerous deep ball duo in the NFL? Why the new look Dolphins could be the surprise of the season. And it's time to talk turkey in LA as this disaster movie finally finishes. Should they fire the leading man before the credits even roll? We'll answer all those questions as we get up with you, starting this hour with the comeback of a lifetime. Game of the night last night, Bill Self's Kansas team trailing Carolina by 15 at the half. But Timmy Legler, they came back in a blink of an eye.
First 4 minutes critical when you find yourself in that situation. Great set play to come out of the half. McCormick with the lob and the defense turning into offense. Nothing better when you're trying to make a comeback than getting some easy ones in transition.
It just like that fast, they were right back in the game. And then under 2 minutes to go, they fed the big man.
Yeah, grown men in the paint in the second half. McCormick, Baycott battle. And then when he goes to the bench with four fouls, they go right back to McCormick. Biggest possession of the game right there.
All right, here's your ball game. 15 seconds left. Carolina down three. Caleb Love, no good, but they're going to get an offensive rebound. This is Puff Johnson with an opportunity. He can't get it, and then they throw it away.
Yeah, panicked a little bit in that moment. Didn't necessarily need a three. They commit the turnover. Bunt Greeny, they get one more shot at it.
Yes, Kansas was inbounding, trying to run out the clock, but we've stepped out of bounds with 4.6 seconds remaining. So Carolina's got one more chance. Hubert drawing up the play. Where are we going? Caleb Love, who was so good in this tournament, but that one wasn't meant to be. And Kansas celebrates a national championship, the fourth in school history. Bill Self and company with the comeback of a lifetime. And he said this one was for the past as well as the present.
I think in 2020, we would have sold out on winning one whenever it was before 22. So to me, this was partially one for them too. I don't know how you guys feel. I always thought the 2020 team was better, more equipped to do well in the NCAA tournament. After the way these kids have played the last month, I think this team can play with any team that Kansas has ever put on the floor.
Remember, 2020 was the year where the tournament was not played because of COVID. Kansas trailed by 16 late in the half, making this the largest deficit overcome at any point to win a national championship. Our win probability was below 10%. For a chance for them to do it. And so, again, with Legler and Seth Greenberg, who's with us and whose coverage has been outstanding from New Orleans. Seth, how'd they do it? This game was headed in one direction, and then it turned completely. How did Bill Self and Kansas do it?
They did it on the defensive end. To get back in the game, what do you got to do? You got to get stops. They did it on the defensive end. They created easy offense out of their defense. And then they pounded the thing in the paint. 14 points off turnovers, 26 points in the paint in the second half. They didn't settle in the second half. They put Bacot in ball screen so they could get downhill. They posted Christian Brown so they could get easy scoring opportunities. They got paint touches. They played downhill offensively, but you don't play down offensively if you don't get stops. Getting in transition off of their defense was the difference in this game in the second half. It was deja vu. Same thing happened in the Elite Eight against Miami. They turned it up a notch defensively. That enabled them to get back in the game. And then offensively, they did not settle.
Timmy Legler, as you watch this, I know you watched every second of it last night. What's the single biggest factor, single biggest key in this win last night?
Well, clearly they didn't lose confidence at halftime. That's key because they've got the talent to do it. They felt they were the better team, so you've got to come out and establish that at the start of the second half. And defensively, Seth's 100% right. They got up into Carolina. They could not run any sets. They had no freedom of movement at all. They started to get tight as they saw something slipping through their hands. And then, look, none of this matters if you don't put the ball in at the other end of the floor, and that's exactly what happened. The law firm of Martin, McCormick, and Brown took over the game, right? Those three guys were sensational. McCormick and Brown did their damage in the paint, and the three-point shooting of Remy Martin, they don't win the game without that either. So all of this came together at exactly the right time, and he's right. They started it on the defensive end of the floor, and then they just looked at who was in front of them and said, we're better players than this, and they took over, and you saw Carolina tighten up.
Yeah, and speaking of Carolina, you know, they were singing All You Need Is Love so much of this tournament. He really was the breakout star of this NCAA tournament. What did Kansas do last night to neutralize that?
They did a great job. Well, Chai Baji did actually a terrific job on him. But, you know, everyone's talking about Caleb Love and the tough night he had. The shots that he missed yesterday were the same shots he made when he had that run in the second half against UCLA and the second run and a half against Duke. It really is. I mean, look, he's a tough shot maker. I say he makes tough, contested NBA shots. And you know what? Last night he did it, but he has the ability to make tough contested shots. Obviously, he had a tough night last night, especially in the second half. But those are the same shots he took all tournament long in the second half. He just couldn't get him knock him down. So Caleb Love had a great run in the tournament. Last night, I thought that the Kansas game plan, pushing him out a step, getting underneath him a little bit more, keeping him out of the lane was a big difference.
Yes, it is worth saying aloud again. There's no way in the world Carolina is in that game last night, meaning that they're in the championship game if Caleb Love hadn't been so brilliant for them through this run. And Seth, you have been as well. Thank you so much. Outstanding work, as always.
Thanks,
and
Greg.
Like, stay close by. We'll get to the NBA shortly. But today's a fun day because we have the new McShay McBoard. Here we go. Todd McShay has his newest two-round mock draft available. And at number one, there's no change. He has Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan going to Jacksonville. He was second in the Heisman last year with 14 sacks for the Wolverines. Then he's got Georgia's Trayvon Walker, so the edge rusher, number two to the Lions. 10 of his 29 pressures last year came in their two college football playoff wins. He's an athletic marvel, and so is this man rounding out the top three, another DN, Kayvon Thibodeau to the Texans, the Oregon star, the third highest pressure in the country last season. And so you take a look now at the top 10 in McShay's new mock draft here. He has two receivers going in there, including Garrett Wilson to the Jets, the speedster from Ohio State at number four, and a quarterback going six, Kenny Pickett from Pitt, going that early to Carolina. And speaking of the receivers, later on in the mock, Todd and Mel are doing trades these days, and he has the Chiefs moving up to 17 to take Alabama's Jameson Williams, who would have gone much higher in this draft if he hadn't gotten injured in the championship game. Remember, Kansas City has just traded away Tyreek Hill. And so let me bring McShay into the conversation here again, along with the rest of the squad. Look at this. We got the rare six box going for you this morning on Get Up, and RC is with us as well. McShay, take us through that thinking there. Jameson Williams, obviously so spectacular. Not quite sure when he'll be able to play, but he's a guy I would think a lot of teams will be interested in.
Yeah, Greeny, you look at Kansas City, they have 12 picks now. That's tied for the most picks of any organization in the NFL this year in the draft with Jacksonville. So you're telling me Kansas City needs 12 picks? They don't have room for 12 guys to come in and compete for spots. I think you get aggressive. They now have picks 29 and 30. Package some other picks, additional picks you have in later rounds. Go up and get the receiver you need. Jameson Williams is the closest thing to Tyreek Hill in this draft. And with the speed, not only vertically, but also after the catch, he will give you that big play element that they're going to miss without Tyreek Hill. So it makes sense to me. And if you sit there at 29, all the other receivers, Jameson Williams will be off the board. Jahan Dotson from Penn State will be gone. You've got teams like Green Bay, Tennessee in front of you that need wide receivers. I think Christian Watson from North Dakota State would probably be the best case scenario if you sit at 29. Why not package those additional picks, go up and get a difference maker? Yeah, you may lose the first month of the season because he's coming off that ACL injury, but when he gets healthy and he gets right, come late in the season, playoff run, you're going to have a dynamic difference maker. And when he was healthy, he was the number one receiver in this class, and I had him as the number six overall prospect.
So good value there if he does come back fully healthy. RC, let me come to you. I haven't had you here this week, but a lot of talk. They've brought in Juju Smith-Schuster and Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Do you believe the Chiefs need to make another aggressive move for a veteran? We've talked about DK Metcalf here and some others. Or do you like the idea of going the route of the draft?
You know what? I like the draft route. If you look at what the Kansas City Chiefs had to do with Tyreek Hill, there was no way Andy Reid was sitting in his office and he said, you know what? I don't want Tyreek Hill anymore. No, it was about the money. And you go get MVS. He's a guy that can stretch the field. Juju Smith-Schuster is going to work inside the numbers along with Travis Kelce. This draft is loaded with players. And you heard Todd mention Watkins from North Dakota State. What he didn't mention is this guy is 6'4". He's long. This guy can stretch the field. And not too many receivers are going to be Tyreek Hill, or they aren't going to be Jameson Williams in the fact of that sort of speed. But this is a guy that can play as well. And so if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, the ace that you have in the hole is you have Patrick Mahomes. And when you have Patrick Mahomes, you can make the MVSs better the way we saw Aaron Rodgers do it and stretch the field with him in Green Bay. Obviously, Juju Smith-Schuster making plays in the middle. And now you add a dynamic rookie that gets to come along if you do move up for a Jameson Williams. Now in the middle of the season, you have a skill position group that is one of the tops in the league.
Let's just talk about the impact that receivers can make immediately. Do I still have Tim Hasselbeck with me? Because, Tim, I'm interested from a quarterback's perspective. Because Green Bay is in a similar situation. Maybe actually they're more desperate, in my view, because they trade away Devontae Adams and they don't have some of the other pieces that Kansas City does. In this day and age, and we've seen some receivers step in and just play huge in recent years as rookies, in particular last year in Cincinnati, can you count on a rookie wide receiver to step in and be a difference maker on a championship caliber team, Tim?
Oh, I think you absolutely can. And we've seen guys come in, you know, ready, like as polished route runners. I mean, the game has changed a little bit in terms of how guys, you know, are coached at a young age, you know, through high school, through college, you know, that they come in a little bit better oftentimes as route runners. And I would say this, I do think Green Bay is in more need of a receiver than Kansas City because of the situation. I think Kansas City is going to be fine. Juju Smith-Schuster, remember, guys, caught 111 balls in 2018. I think he's going to have a great year in Kansas City. And I think that, you know, the scenario that Todd outlined is a great one, because think about this. You know, if you're at Kansas City, Mecole Hardman might have a huge year. Well, in that scenario, Mecole Hardman, who was drafted in 2019, now holding on to him is going to be harder. And so drafting a wide receiver that projects to be a very good player and not having him for the first month, 2 months of this season is not the end of the world, especially when you're a team, again, as Todd said, that doesn't have 12 spots for you know, opportunities to compete to make the roster.
Bart, what do you think?
I think they got about 20 spots on the defensive side of the ball that they need to fill. We always focus on the obvious. The obvious is that they need defensive help. Frank Clark hasn't got double-digit sacks. You know, Melvin Ingram was a godsend last year. I think they may have to try and go for a corner. They have to address so many needs. You know, we always tout Andy Reid has been such an offensive guru, what he's done with Freddie Mitchell and James Thrash. Right now he has arguably the greatest quarterback in a generation, and now he thinks that he needs to go get him more offensive weapons. You know how arrogant offensive guys are? They think they have everything that they need. They went out and got him a deep threat. You can't replace Tyreek Hill with one player. So they've replaced him with guys that have parts of his skill set to try and fill that void. But if they can't stop anybody, it doesn't matter. So I think you have to get somebody opposite of Frank Clark because he's fourth as far as salary cap. He has to go.
All right, I have to break on that thought, but I will come back with more on this, Fowler. I'll get you in, I promise. But we're going to talk more football as we continue. Russell Wilson has a new home after a Super Bowl winning run in Seattle, and you will hear the advice another legend is offering as he prepares to take the reins a mile high. Plus, we all know how disappointing the season has been for LeBron's Lakers. Now you will hear how one decision made months ago could have made this a very different story. And speaking of stories, it could be the biggest one of the year. You are looking at pictures of Tiger Woods this morning. This is from today. Tiger at Augusta looks chilly. You see, he's got the sweater going today. But Tiger Woods, this is moments ago. He will meet the media a little over an hour from now. We will hear from him. Will he play this week? That's the big question. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Back on Get Up, and as promised, time for QB quick reads. Let's go around the sport with our Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, how about Tua in the season he's facing?
Yeah, it's certainly a lot of pressure for Tua in Miami. I do think that we're going to see his best season, you know, with the new coaching staff and an offense that probably fits his skill set better than anything he's done his previous two seasons, as well as a supporting cast that's better. I think this is great news for Tua all the way around. Obviously, we'll see a lot of, you know, things where the ball comes out quickly, getting the ball to guys on the move, on the run. And I think Tua will excel in that environment. You know, as you go around the league and now look at Patrick Mahomes, it's funny to me to hear people, you know, think about, well, what's this offense going to look like without Tyreek Hill? Can they survive? Will they be the same? And yeah, it's a big loss. That being said, there's still plenty of speed and talent in Kansas City. Andy Reid has always done a great job coaching that position. I think Juju Smith-Schuster will have a huge year. And Kelce is still one of the biggest matchup problems in the entire NFL. And so I think Kansas City is going to be just fine, even without Tyreek Hill. And then lastly, Russell Wilson. This is a massive upgrade at the position for the Denver Broncos. And I think, I don't know that that can be overstated. And so when you look at, you know, the difference he could make, he's still an excellent deep ball thrower. He's not the same escape artist he once was, but on a team with very good wide receivers, a team that I think is one of the best young backs in the league, I think Russell Wilson, the upgrade in a really tough division, is going to be worth it for the Denver Broncos.
And if there's someone who knows a little bit about starting a career for the second time in Denver, it's Peyton Manning. And Peyton was saying that he's chatted with Russell about this. He said, quote, I've talked to Russell a number of times. We've had conversations about some of the things that helped me in my transition to a different team that I think can apply to anybody making the jump, especially after being in a place for a long time. I've had conversations with Coach Nathaniel Hackett as well about some of those things, some do's and don'ts that helped me and can certainly apply. And Russell can hit the ground running here in his first year. Is he going to, RC, is the question. Is Russell Wilson going to be outstanding right out of the gate and make Denver a legit Super Bowl contender in the toughest division ever?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson has been more than just steady throughout his career. He's been one of the top and one of the more productive and successful quarterbacks in the NFL right out of the gate in Seattle. And then when he took the team over and became an MVP candidate for a couple of years. But now you have young Jerry Jeudy, you have Tim Sutton on the outside, Cortland Sutton, Javonte Williams in the backfield. And you also have a defense that's going to make plays for you. And so when you look at Russell Wilson, here's his chance to be counted amongst the all-time great. In his second chapter, he can now show that he can lead a team to win the Super Bowl. That's the knock against Russell Wilson, that when the Seattle Seahawks were Super Bowl contenders, he was just a piece of the team. The team was led by Marshawn Lynch and the Legion of Boom. They went in Denver to get Russell Wilson to win a Super Bowl. And that's the only reason you go out and get him. They didn't go get Marcus Mariota. They didn't go kick the tires on Ryan Fitzpatrick. They got a guy that's going to be a future Hall of Famer and now can put his name amongst the top tier and the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. This is a huge year for the Denver Broncos, but it's even a bigger year for Russell Wilson.
I think that's right. And Jeremy, you were telling an interesting story this morning in our meeting about the way it is being received so far by some of his new teammates.
Yeah, Greeny, I'm hearing that there's a sense of relief in Denver among those playmakers because Russell Wilson recently hosted those guys out in San Diego for several days where they threw on the field. He had housing set up, food, the whole works, right? And those guys came away thinking, wow, we are going to maximize our enormous skill set for really the very first time. And I'm told Wilson has also been very hands-on, taking ownership of the new offense, working in lockstep with Nathaniel Hackett.
How good is it and he going to be, Bart Scott?
I mean, we've been saying for years that Denver was just a quarterback away. And you give him Russell Wilson and then we say, oh, well, I don't know if Denver's going to be that good. Now, what are we talking about? This is one of the best rosters, young rosters in the NFL. And then, you know, that's why they were on so many other quarterbacks' lists. And you give him Russell Wilson, somebody who's a dual-threat quarterback. You talk about Williams, who's a tremendous running back. I think he is like beast mode when you talk about the tackles he breaks, and now you're able to manipulate the defense because Russell Wilson's always going to make you hold the backside defensive end, the backside linebacker, so it's going to create another running opportunities. And then you talk about a moon ball in Denver at high altitude. What is it now? A Mars ball? Because it's going somewhere, right? And so I really believe that this team, the sky's the limit what they have on defense. This is a complete team with one of the most poised quarterbacks in the league.
Quickly, though, Tim, the problem, they have three problems in Denver that I can see, and they are called the Chargers, the Chiefs, and the Raiders. And that division is loaded. Are they the team to beat, in your view, right now, with Russell Wilson and the rest of that roster?
No, I don't believe that they're the team to beat, but I think that without Russell Wilson, Greeny, we weren't even talking about them competing against any of those teams. And I don't think there's any doubt with Russell Wilson they can compete. And it's interesting watching some of that video that we're running. You know, like, he also comes in there as this leader already, it sounds like, and from what Jeremy's talking about, that's being really well received. And I don't think that was the case in Seattle. I mean, Russell wasn't traded based on performance. I think it was more team dynamic, which does not appear to be an issue immediately with the guys that are in Denver. Bart and I have talked a little bit about that off air, and it clearly looks like it's being well received by some of these younger players in Denver.
Quickly, RC, same question to you. Raiders, Chiefs, Broncos, who am I forgetting? Chargers. That's a brutal division. Who's the team to beat right this minute?
Yeah. The Kansas City Chiefs still have to be the team to beat. And I know we're going to look at the offseason moves and think about how much better all the rest of the team in the division have gotten. But this team has been the king and been on top of the mountain the last 5 years. They still have Andy Reid. You still have Patrick Mahomes. And so to me, until someone else shows who they are on the field, not who they are on paper, the Kansas City Chiefs are the favorite. But the race is a lot tighter than it's ever been.
Bart's not buying. Super quick. 10 seconds.
RC, they pay us to predict the future, not the present. And the future is that, you know, you heard Andy Reid, you heard Mahomes say, they're resetting. They're resetting. Come on, man. Cleo is disappointed.
This always
they
happens
didn't
to me.
Say rebuilding.
I have
they didn't
to
say
to
rebuilding.
Right when we get to the good stuff. These guys are going to fight as we continue, I promise. But I have to go to a break here. We're up against the end of the hour. LeBron and the Lakers have been the NBA's biggest disappointment this year, and an L.A. legend is blaming one bad decision. You'll hear what it was and why he is right as we continue. Plus, a little sneaky Hembo time, and we're going to throw this one at Jalen. So the Nets have KD and Kyrie, and they're both averaging 27 points this year. What was the last team that had two players that did that? That's the question. The answer is coming up next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
We are back on Get Up, and that is a live picture of Tiger Woods at Augusta National. He's playing, looks like Justin Thomas there to the left of him, but that's Tiger working in a bunker there at Augusta. He's going to meet the media an hour and a half from now to talk about his thoughts and his plans on how he feels and the chances that he will be on the course on Thursday to start round one of the Masters. Coverage of that, of course, you'll see here on ESPN. Again, all the intrigue surrounding Tiger and his attempted comeback here, we will continue to follow him as we go. But again, that's a live picture of him on the course right now. In the meantime, back to the NFL for a moment here, because this came up in our conversation we had before the show this morning, and I think it's fascinating. In Cleveland, the Browns, of course, are getting set to start life with Deshaun Watson as their quarterback instead of Baker Mayfield. They have yet to find a trade partner for Mayfield, who is owed nearly $19 million this year, which is the final year of his rookie contract. And look, everyone knows he's not going to be in Cleveland anymore. And so, Jeremy Fowler, what should we make of the fact that as of this moment, he still is?
Yeah, well, I'm hearing that Baker Mayfield's agent and the Browns have been in constant communication. They both want to work this out and get a deal done. Problem is, I'm hearing from teams that this is being slow played around the league, that teams are sort of waiting for the Browns to either cover a lot of the money, the $18.8 million in salary that's guaranteed, or have to release them outright. And I've even heard to some extent, like, it's so slow that one exec asked me, hey, is it because of, like, the Deshaun Watson deal that other owners and teams are upset that they did that deal, gave him $230 million guaranteed despite all his issues, that maybe they're icing him out there? Now, there's no proof of that, but it has been slower than expected. I know some league execs are shocked. They said, look, this guy can play. He's shown it. He's had two good years. And I talked to one GM who said, hey, just hold on to him. Wait till somebody gets hurt or there's an injury or something after the draft and a team's more desperate.
Well, I mean, if we look particularly at a draft class, Bart Scott, where the excitement level over the quarterbacks for the most part is not that high. I know you're not a big Baker Mayfield fan. You've made that clear on this program over the course of time. But he's better than this, right? He's better than nobody wants him at all. Are you surprised with the way this thing is going so far?
Not really, right? Because we understand that the draft is coming and people are going to be patient and see what they're able to get with the young quarterback. The problem with Baker Mayfield isn't that he can't play. It's that he's expensive. And most of the places where they have openings, those quarterbacks are cheaper, and everybody's gearing up for the quarterback class next year. So he's running out of places. He's going to have to wait for someone to get hurt, and that's one play. Or he can try and go somewhere and be a backup and sit in the weeds like Ryan Tannehill did and wait for somebody to falter. But the problem is, like, who's his guy? Like, who's his former coordinator that got somewhere that's going to stand on the table for him? Because we know that more comes with Baker Mayfield than just what he has. He's a guy with a he's loquacious. He has a big personality. You have to be able to take that into account, how he fits in your locker room.
RC, let me come to you on this, because I'm going to ask you just to look into the crystal ball. When we are together, you'll be in here on the first Monday of the NFL season with everybody. Will we be talking about Baker Mayfield having started a game week one for any team in the NFL?
I don't believe so. I believe Baker Mayfield's best chance is kind of what Bart said. Find a spot where somebody likes you. Find a spot where somebody understands how to deal with you in the locker room and do what Ryan Tannehill did, which is wait in the weeds. Now, if he can get a situation where he could get to Atlanta, he could get to Seattle and have some quarterback battles with guys like Drew Locke, guys like Marcus Mariota, then maybe so. Maybe Baker Mayfield has a chance. But when you look at how slow the market has been for Baker Mayfield and the way that some teams perceive him right now, I don't know necessarily which team view him as a starter. And I thought it was very telling that the Indianapolis Colts, that were looking for a quarterback, have felt like they were a quarterback away since they lost Andrew Luck, said they didn't even kick the tires on Baker Mayfield. We didn't even check. We didn't even shoot a text. We didn't even ask are you free now? We didn't swipe either way on one of our dating apps. They didn't care at all if he could be a part of their team. Instead, went with the 38-year-old Matt Ryan. You had a chance to maybe get your quarterback of the future, and it was of no interest to that team. I think that speaks a lot into the way some of these executives see Baker Mayfield.
Give me the quick evaluation, Tim Hasselbeck.
Well, listen, I think we've over-evaluated Baker Mayfield. The scenario and path to a starter is clearly going somewhere where they're unhappy with their guy and you get an opportunity to play. But, look, I've been kind of out on this situation for a while with Baker Mayfield. I never thought it made sense to draft him number one overall. And, Greeny, we've kind of joked about this before, but, like, there's a lot of truth to this for me personally. I've said before, and we have a graphic to show it, one of the reasons I've been out on Baker is when I looked at his combine numbers, I'm like, man, that looks familiar. And then I realized it was familiar to me. And so I'm like, hold on a second. Like, I was never confused to be a guy that was going to get drafted number one overall. I think the reality of the situation is that he is,
Quadzilla.
You know, he's limited athletically, if you will. Like he's a guy that I think is a rhythm passer. It has to be perfect around him. And guys like that shouldn't be drafted number one overall. And guys like that are going to be searching for opportunities.
29.
I am very glad we got
you
that.
Got a 29-inch Bert.
Well, you're overestimating. Much more football as we go. But let me get Jalen Rose up here, and we'll get to the basketball. And first off, let us say congratulations to Aaliyah Boston. We are brought to you today by Wendy's, a proud sponsor of the 2022 John R. Wooden Men's and Women's Player of the Year Awards. And just a day after leading South Carolina to the national championship, Aaliyah Boston was the Wendy's Wooden Award winner. She averaged almost 17 points, shot 54% this year, and again, led her team to the national championship. Congratulations to her. Speaking of national championships, the men took center stage last night, and it was Kansas and North Carolina. And this one was no contest early. Kansas down 15 at the break, but they came roaring back, and then they were pounding it inside in that second half. That's the big man, David McCormick, finishing once, and then finishing twice. Kansas a three-point lead. It'll take you right to the finish of the game. Again, it's a three-point game, 4 seconds left on the clock, and Carolina's got one last chance. Caleb Love was so good in this tournament, but he can't get it to go there, and Kansas holds on and holds off Carolina 72-69 to win the fourth championship in school history. And joining us now to talk about that and much more, oh, there we go, the great Jalen Rose is here. Jalen and Jacoby will be together tonight for NBA Countdown, of course, here on ESPN. And we know your love for the college game, obviously. What did you take away from Kansas last night?
So first off, look at this from a betting lens, right? I felt like Kansas would win. I felt like they had the better team. I actually felt that they would probably win by double digits. Mm. They were a four-point favorite at the half, 1 point. Mm. They were trailing double digits at the half,
yeah,
and they covered at the end and still won the game.
Yeah.
That is crazy. And I want to give a props to UNC and Hubert Davis. They were an eighth seed. And so many times we look at Carolina and we imagine their great history, but they did a lot to overcome this season, and I have to give them an extra shout because they beat Duke twice. And I'm as happy as anybody when Duke loses. But in all honesty, Bill Self has dominated the Big 12 on a yearly basis. He's continued to recruit really well. Kansas cut down the nets last night. Jayhawk Nation celebrates. It was a great game.
Okay, it was indeed. Let's turn our attention to the NBA. And I know that when you were a little kid growing up in Michigan, Magic Johnson was your idol.
Yes, absolutely.
He was here yesterday. And he said something that got a lot of attention. He was talking about, I asked him specifically, what blame does LeBron James have to take for the troubles the Lakers have had this season? And he told us a fascinating story. Listen to this.
The blame that he's got to take is the fact that DeRozan ended up in Chicago and not with the Lakers. You know, he has
expand on that thought if you
will. Well, because DeRozan wanted to play for the Lakers. And when I got the call from his agent, I called the Lakers, said, hey, he wants to come home. And DeRozan could have been a Laker instead of a Bull. We could have made that deal. But when Russell and LeBron and them start talking, that's when they nixed that deal and went with Westbrook, and he became a Laker instead of DeRozan.
And obviously, DeRozan has had a brilliant season in Chicago. I guess we'll never know how things might have been different. But I thought that was fascinating as you sort of put that into the whole mess that has been the Lakers season.
So the Lakers just overplayed their hand. When you have a LeBron James, you're in win-now mode each season. So you're going to sacrifice young, talented players in order to win now. And they did that. They acquired Anthony Davis to go with LeBron, and in the bubble, they won a championship. And then they tried to double down with Russell Westbrook, and they crapped out. It happens. But this is not on Russell Westbrook. He's having a good season, not a great season. He's not performing the way you want a $40 million player to play. However, this is actually on Anthony Davis. When you bring him to the Lakers, you think he's going to be the guy that's playing like the Joker or playing like Luka and leading the team during the regular season where LeBron can supplement him, and then they get to the playoffs and dominate. Well, since he's more injured than available, LeBron has to carry the load, playing the five, playing the floor, trying to lead the league in scoring, and that dynamic just isn't going to work. So as much blame as Russ is going to get, and of course, you miss a DeMar DeRozan.
Right.
He went to Chicago. He played terrific. He would have definitely changed the dynamics of the Lakers. Having him with LeBron and AD definitely makes them a contender. So that's a miss totally. But this is on the health of AD. They bet on the health of AD, and they crapped out.
Mercifully, their season will come to an end this week. Quickly, I already know your answer because you've yelled at me about this so many times. But you know I'm not giving up on the Brooklyn Nets. They're the 10th seed right now. Are they about to shock the world and make a deep run?
No. Everybody's so hypnotized by their offensive prowess, and I am too. Like, when I watch Kevin Durant, I'm like, nobody can ever stop him from scoring. When I watch Kyrie Irving, I'm like, ooh and ah. That's what a Harlem Globetrotter would look like when they're in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But then every time I look down at the scoreboard, they're losing. The biggest games, we were at Memphis. We saw them lose. When Kyrie returned against the Hornets, they lost. These big games, other than Philly, they're losing. They don't play defense. They're thin up front. And, yes, they have a puncher's chance when they have those guys. But are you going to bet your hard-earned money that they'll beat the Bucks or the Heat in the first-round series? I'm not betting on that. If they make the playoffs.
Yeah, they have to first get in. They probably will have to win two road games to even get out of the play-in. All right, that said, I got a trivia question.
Okay.
You ready? Hembo is waiting for
you.
So we got KD and Kyrie. They've each averaged 27 points this year. What was the last team that had two guys to average at least 27?
You got to have two top five players to do that. I'll say Shaq and Kobe early 2000s.
It's a good guess, but it actually happened so recently. And people, I didn't think of it. It was just 2 years ago, James Harden and Russell Westbrook were together in Houston, and they both averaged 27. How about that? And now, of course, they're both like three teams later.
Who wins the championship first between those guys?
I mean, is neither an option?
Right?
I love the glasses.
Thank you,
I will
brother.
See you tonight,
thank
my
you,
friend.
Brother.
Awesome. We will be together tonight, 7 Eastern, right here, NBA Countdown, leading into the final week of our regular season and a Tuesday marquee matchup. We have Giannis tonight. We have DeRozan tonight. It's the Bucks and the Bulls at 8 Eastern. And again, Jalen and Stephen A. and Wilbon and I will be together, NBA Countdown, 7 Eastern, for 60 minutes right here on ESPN. Meanwhile, LT Gray on the course as we speak at Augusta National. He is out there right now working again. We will hear from him live later today. Is Tiger Woods going to play the Masters this year? We may find out the answer later this morning. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're back on Get Up, and as I said, to me, it's a holiday. Todd McShay has a mock draft out. It's two rounds, and let's take a look, McShay, at the quarterbacks. You have Kenny Pickett going 6th to the Panthers. Take me through the thinking.
Yeah, Kenny Pickett is the most experienced quarterback in this group. 49 starts. He's ready to go and ready to win now if you're a team looking for that. That's why I put Pickett with that number six spot. I think Matt Rhule obviously is trying to win some games next season. He gives them the best chance to do so. And when you look at the pro days, he was at every single one of them. The Panthers do not have a pick until the fourth round. Why would they invest that much time and money in going out and looking at all these quarterbacks at the pro days if they weren't going to take a quarterback at that number six spot?
That's an interesting one there. The next one is Malik Willis. You have him going 20 to the Steelers. Your thoughts?
Yeah, this guy's so dynamic. I don't know that he's going to get to 20, but when you get past 9, if he doesn't go to Seattle at 9 or Atlanta to 8, there's not a team that needs a quarterback until 20. So we'll see how it all plays out. But Malik, with the strongest arm in this class and the ability to create as a runner, you got to remember, he had the most forced missed tackles of any player in the FBS this past season. That's ahead of Breece Hall, the running back who's going to be the first back off the board, and Kenneth Walker, the number two running back. So you get a dynamic athlete and the strongest arm in the class. You just have to develop him. And then there's Desmond Ridder, who had going at the bottom of the first. It's been interesting, Greeny. A lot of people, including myself, thought Corral could be the third quarterback off the board. The more people I've talked to in the league are saying Desmond Ridder, if not the third best quarterback, maybe the first or second best quarterback in this class. Had that struggle against Alabama in the college football semifinal, but he's big, he's got a big arm, he's mobile, there's a lot to work with there, and everyone loves his interviews and his intangibles that he brings to the field.
So I'm going to bring Hasselbeck into the conversation as well, because quarterbacks are the topic. But I want to circle back to one thing with you, McShay, and that is I listen to your First Draft podcast every single week. And so I am aware that at one point you and Mel were talking about the possibility of Malik Willis going as high as number two in this draft to the Detroit Lions. Is there still, in your view, a shot that we see a stunner, what I think would in most people's minds be a stunner, and that could go something like that?
No, I feel strongly that Detroit is going to go in a different direction. I think it's going to be pass rusher with that number two pick. Could be Trayvon Walker from Georgia, Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon. I think the first quarterback off the board, unless there's a trade, will be at number six to Carolina. Atlanta's interesting at 8, but I think that they want to get a wide receiver or a player of value that in terms of their grade. And then at number 9, the real wild card to me is Seattle. Do they go quarterback? Or do they try to build this roster and deal with Drew Lock for at least 1 year?
And so then, Hasselbeck, let me come to you. I've not had a chance to get, as I'm sure you're starting to do your evaluations of these guys. If you're stacking these quarterbacks in a board or in an order, who do you like?
Well, listen, it depends on what you're looking for. I mean, clearly Kenny Pickett is the most ready to come in and play right away, but I think there has to be real concerns about what he projects to being. And then if you're talking about developing a guy, then the guy that you would look at would be Willis. And the reason I said about Pickett, Greeny, he's older than every quarterback that was drafted in the first round last year. Mm-hmm. And then you look at Willis. He's an A-plus runner. You know, Todd, you know, brought up how he, related to running back and forced missed tackles. I mean, he's unbelievable as a runner, and he's got a huge arm. He's just wild with it, and he kind of gets his feet out of whack many times because he relies so much on running. And so, you know, those would be kind of the guys at the top. I would agree with people in that regard, but a lot of it has to do with what are you looking for and when are you planning on him playing?
It's going to be interesting to see. We are 3 weeks and 2 days away from night one of the NFL draft. McShay, I'll talk to you on radio in a little bit. I have a million more questions about mock draft 4.0 from McShay. Meanwhile, this is the big story of the week. Tiger Woods, who played a practice round at least 9 holes yesterday at Augusta, and I believe we have some live video of him this morning as he's back out there on the course right now working things through, and he says that it's going to be a game time decision for him. This is since last we saw of him. He sort of took the sweater off. Maybe it's warming up there at Augusta. Weather does figure to be a factor. Again, he will meet the media a little over an hour from now. We will run that live. We will hear it live here on ESPN, and maybe he will have a little more insight into the possibility that we'll see him this weekend playing in the Masters. And so because I have these athletes here, I wanted to get just a quick take from each of you guys, because I know that while golf may not be in your blood the way it is in mine, it's a sport that you care about, and he is certainly a person everyone has a thought on. Bart Scott, this is a guy who is a year removed from almost losing a leg. What is your perspective on the possibility he comes back and plays in the Masters this quickly?
I mean, I think where Tiger is in the stage of his life is a position of gratitude, and you have to define, how do you define success for Tiger Woods, knowing where he came from just, you know, over, you know, 17 months ago, the fact that he's even standing on a golf course, being able to consider if he's going to play, is a blessing. And he may not ever catch Jack Nicholson, but I think this is the way that he's defined success, the fact that he can inspire so many others, coming from maybe losing his leg to be able to come back and play. It even be mentioned.
Yeah, Nicholas with 18 majors in his career, and of course Tiger Woods sitting on 15. How about you, RC, as you watch these pictures here, what thoughts go through your mind?
Greeny, the first thing you said was wrong. You said these guys care about golf. No, I don't. I care about Tiger Woods. I'm going to be absolutely honest with you. I'm not sitting down with my father and watching a golf tournament if Tiger Woods is not in it. That's the reason I started to watch it. That is the reason I continue to watch it. And he has set different bars for greatness, whether it was the way that golfers looked, whether it was the way that golfers trained. And now he's setting a new bar for greatness with coming back from almost losing his leg after a terrible accident. We got to see him play with his son, and it was amazing. We got to see him as a father. Now we get to see a level of toughness that we haven't seen from a golfer. So again, Tiger Woods raises the bar for greatness as it comes to golfing.
Timmy Legs, how about you?
Yeah, it's hard for me to wrap my head around this. I didn't know if I'd ever see Tiger Woods play golf again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you really think about it, we're talking about 14 months ago. He almost died in that accident. Talked about potentially losing his leg. And for him to make his reemergence on this stage at this tournament is incredible. If he even makes the cut, it's one of the greatest accomplishments of his career. If he contends, if he ends up in the top 10 in this tournament this weekend, this might be the greatest thing Tiger Woods has ever done. And think about that statement, because you're talking about the greatest to ever do it. So, look, I do love golf. It is in my blood. It is a sickness. My swing is a sickness at sometimes as well. But I'd be watching regardless. But when Tiger plays, there is no question. There's a heightened awareness and an excitement around the weekend.
Again, we'll hear from him just over an hour from now, and maybe he will let us know for certain that it is his plan to play on Thursday. We'll find out. In the meantime, First Take is coming your way after an epic comeback for Bill Self. Where does he now stand among coaches in the college game? Stephen A. with Molly, Seth Greenberg, and Keyshawn. It's First Take, top of the hour here on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Back on Get Up, and we finish with this. Nicholas Harbor is a 5-star defensive end recruit. He's a high school junior, and RC, he ran a 10.32 100-meter dash this weekend. He's 6'5", 235. What do you think?
Well, first of all, the dude running next to him looks like his son, Greeny. He looks like that is a kid that he birthed. I'm talking about just flat out phenomenal. We used to talk about Jadeveon Clowney and what he looked like in high school. Check out this dude. I saw something on Instagram today. A dude said he need a 6-star for as special as he is. If ever this dude is chasing me or my kid, you touch my son, we got to jump you, because ain't no way y'all supposed to be on the field together.
That is Nicholas Harbor. Remember the name. RC, thank you. Wonderful day today. Enjoy. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.